Hello, and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast. Beautiful Business is a community for leaders who believe there's a better way of doing business. We believe beautiful businesses are led with purpose by people who care, guided by a clear strategy, and soulfully grown. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Beautiful Business Podcast. My name is Ewan Sang, part of the Beautiful Business team, and this week I was joined by Kerry Tottingham. Kerry is co-director of A Brilliant Thing, a community interest company supporting culture change in organizations that she runs with her mum and two sisters in the UK. They do this through coaching and consultancy, focusing on strategy design, reflective practice, and inclusive culture making. A Brilliant Thing works with charities, public sector teams, and purpose-led businesses. What they love is collaboration, creating change, social value, and connecting people across sectors. Kerry, let's talk a bit about bringing a design thinking into how you grow your business. But perhaps before we jump straight into that, maybe you give us a bit of background to you, to A Brilliant Thing, what it is that you do and who you do it for.
Yeah, so I'm Kerry and I'm co-director of A Brilliant Thing, along with my mum and my two sisters. It's a family business and we're a social enterprise. So the profits that we make from our work go back into community projects. And my background is as an artist. So I started off as a jobbing artist. I didn't drive, and I've got this picture of myself with a shopping trolley full of like willow and creative materials on the bus going to different community centres and different schools. And I used to do a lot of teaching creativity with groups to help them educate about things like world health issues and activism through creative materials and art making and kind of participatory approaches. But I got sucked up into the charity management world after I found out I was quite good at writing funding applications. And I think I'm quite good at writing funding applications because I like storytelling and I like making something intangible real, which is kind of what we do at Brilliant Thing now. So yeah, after being an artist, I then worked in charities and the NHS and health sectors and a lot with public sectors, so councils, local authorities. I started Brilliant Thing because there seemed to be two things that were really important to achieving the outcomes that we want to achieve in the voluntary sector or social purpose sector, which was strategy and culture. And both of those things needed to involve supporting people along the way. So the people that we work with, but also the people that we're doing the work for. And a lot of the time I was, you know, in online meetings and following Gantt charts and kind of ticking off processes. And I knew that the impact wasn't happening because we weren't connecting with people. We weren't designing for people. We were designing for services. And Brilliant Thing kind of emerged at the end of the pandemic where, to be honest, I completely burnt myself out and was missing being creative because the higher up you go in management, often the less time you get to play and be expressive and creative. So yeah, that's where Brilliant Thing was kind of birthed. And what we do now is we run organizational development programs. So we do coaching and team development and away days and retreats with charities and public sector teams. We have some social value projects, and we also do some work around working with trauma and supporting organizations who support people who are suffering the impacts of trauma and help them to become trauma-informed. So we've got quite a wide range of things that we do across the UK, and we do lots of collaborations as well with other organizations. So that's who we are.
Fabulous. It's quite interesting, your story about, I've got this vision of you now pushing a shopper trolley with loads of like arty materials and, you know.
It was a tartan shopping trolley. Often had an IKEA bag over my arm as well.
I mean, you know, IKEA bags are like incredibly indispensable for all sorts of jobs. But it's very interesting how you said there that as you kind of waded deeper into the corporate, but into the bigger organizational kind of worlds, how the opportunity to use your creativity was stifled and it kind of got squeezed. And it just reminds me a lot of lots of business owners and business leaders who kind of grow their businesses and get to the point where it almost stops being fun. Like the buzz and the excitement of, you know, everything at the start starts to kind of just kind of seep away a bit. And then it's all about process. It's all about following the schedules and Gantt charts, as you say, and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think I was still... So I used to make beautiful PowerPoint presentations because, you know, that was me showing my creativity. But I was definitely still being creative because I was having to work out how to use limited resources to create as big of an impact as possible, or bring different groups together to work in partnership to achieve something new. But what I wasn't getting was that input of creativity into myself. So I was kind of like drawing from a rapidly emptying well of creativity. And yeah, so within Brilliant Thing, it's really important that I and the people that work in the organization have time to be creative, to play, to be inspired, to see new things, and to do that filling up.
It's so important. It's really powerful. I love that concept of filling up your well of creativity. Not only being exposed to creativity, but the opportunity to be creative yourself is energizing. The opportunity to express yourself in that sort of way is so powerful, but not just for the teams within those organizations as well. I guess mm-hmm. one of the challenges is with people who are particularly, or those which are highly creative, is around channeling it into mm-hmm. you know, the different areas and things like that. I mean, by its very definition, creativity is about, you know, exploring and pushing out the different boundaries and doing things that perhaps haven't been done before. And I suppose segueing quite nicely into the next question about design thinking, that is one methodology, I suppose, where you can almost kind of harness that creativity and push it into the right direction. So my question to you is, how would you describe design thinking? Because that's something you use quite a lot of within a Brilliant Thing. So how would you describe it to somebody who's not perhaps come across it before?
Yeah. Well, maybe just rewinding a little bit. And I got into one of those management or those kind of organizational positions. The title was co-design coordinator. And I didn't know what co-design meant. I don't think very many people did at the time, particularly in public sector and voluntary sector. But what I did know is that it sounded an awful lot like participatory art making. So that idea that you go out and invite lots of people into the work, everybody has their part and their role and contributes and benefits from the process, and working out how to make something new together that's going to achieve what you want to achieve or create some kind of new solution and trying that out, that felt very like the creative process. And so when I found this language of design thinking, it made complete sense. And it also helped me to communicate the creative process in maybe non-traditionally creative environments like councils. So design thinking, it's a, as you say, it's a methodology, and it's great for moving from complex challenge to solution. And the really brilliant thing about it is it puts the people at the heart of that design work. So whoever you're trying to create this solution for, which I always encourage organizations to include their workforce and their maybe their volunteers as part of that who, but the beneficiary, the person that we're working for, they're involved right from the start. And I really like, so there's a really easy one is the Design Council's Double Diamond, which has got four parts. And but each, no matter which kind of model you use, the design thinking process goes through a number of different stages. So the first one is about exploring what you've got. It's a kind of research phase, and you go out really widely, involve as many people as possible around the particular topic or kind of challenge that you're facing. And then you move into working out what matters. So there's a lot of need in the world. There's a lot of things that we could design better stuff for, better things for. But actually, we're looking for the brilliant thing. So we need to work out really early on what matters to the people that we're working with, what matters to this group. And that helps give us our, you know, a real kind of tangible design question to work through. And then it's the fun bit, the development bit. So making things, trying things out, prototyping, doing things quickly and cheaply and badly often, and kind of playing with it and working out lots of different potential solutions. Then testing them and testing them in, well, I like to test them in fun and surprising ways, different environments. We use loads of creative methods in that part as well to work out what's going to stick, what can we afford, what's possible. And then coming up with that solution that is the brilliant thing. And then tweaking it, refining it, and potentially moving back through into another research phase. So that's the sort of shape of design thinking. And you can get really technical about it, but basically it's getting expansive, then refining what matters, and then getting expansive again, and then refining again, and working through that process.
I just want to take a quick minute to say thanks to our trusted partners, Crystal Hosting. Crystal is a B Corp powered by 100% renewable energy, and has a goal of planting 1 billion trees by 2030. Crystal Service is super fast and super reliable, and they're genuinely really nice people. We're super picky over who we work with as partners at Beautiful Business, and we're delighted to count Crystal as one of them. Back to the podcast. It's a really elegant model, and we've used it before with projects when we've been working with the NHS. We were working on an initiative to help people with bladder and bowel conditions. And the bit that really I found most powerful, and it was actually, just to rewind a little bit, when you said that whole kind of co-creation of art, maybe it was because we were speaking about kids earlier on, but the whole vision of like lots of people with lots of ideas with a paint pot and brushes, and you just think, oh my goodness, this could be an absolute catastrophe. The wonderful thing I found about design thinking is when you get into that, I guess there's different names for it and different models that you might use, but our needs analysis part and really understanding what would impact the most for the people, how would it benefit the folks that we're doing this for the most, is that incredible focus. It's like that's the bit that pulls all the you know, the wanton paint pots and brushes into the same direction. So we're all trying to paint the same sort of picture. And that's, I think, is where the power comes in. Would you agree? It's that being able to focus those disparate minds, those disparate people, everybody with their own kind of ideas and preconceptions about what could be done, but getting them to really focus on that problem statement, on that the impact areas that you're trying to make a difference in.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I use the phrase frame to dance within. So we use design thinking to create the frame and then we get to dance in it. And it's helpful because sometimes people are very process-led. They might be quite risk-averse, or there might be a way that an organization works. And if you can do any kind of creative process, you've got to hold that space for people to engage in it. And often that means building trust in the process, and it stops people being scared of the process. The fact that we're always moving through it, there are clearly defined stages. As you say, those refined questions that kind of really, when people say, what are you doing with that project? It gives an answer and it helps people feel like there's purpose and movement. And I think those things are, especially in industries that are time poor or maybe resource poor, it's about using what you've got and working out what's the most impactful piece of work that you could do together.
It fosters this kind of, and you mentioned the word a number of times, this kind of collaboration, and it builds consensus as well, I guess, in the sense that people help shape some of these questions that you're asking. I love that concept of a framework within the dance. That's really nice. One of the previous podcasts that we ran, we interviewed Chu Cao, and he came up with a lovely analogy, similar sort of lines, but he said, thinking about putting up guardrails so people can play, but it just means that they, you know, they don't hurt themselves. You've got some guardrails up. And it seems like that sort of thing. And it's quite interesting, and we'll explore culture in a second, but you mentioned there, you'll have some people that might be in these sorts of groups who might be really supportive of this type of creativity and collaboration and openness, which the process needs. And then there'll be those which might be more in the kind of detractor camp, who might be perhaps a little bit cynical, perhaps a little bit skeptical. And do you find that this process kind of helps work it? Because you must have come across these types of folks in public sector particularly, but you know, in some of these more traditional, where perhaps they are very used to the old way of doing things, as it were. Do you find that this type of process helps, and how does it help?
Yeah, I think the importance of facilitation matters here. So the confidence to hold the process is important. So whether you've got an external facilitator or you're running a process within your organization, that understanding and ability to hold the space, especially when you've got maybe power in the room, or you've got people who, as you say, might be really skeptical. I guess that's the first point. I want to use an example as well, which is a project that I was doing a while ago. We were doing a design thinking process, and there was somebody in the room who, he was definitely quite traditional in his kind of approach to things like project management. And he was very quiet, didn't really say very much, lots of sort of closed body language. And I kind of thought, he's the one. He's the one we're not going to get. And participated, you know, wasn't rude or disruptive or anything, but I felt like he maybe wasn't quite connecting with it. And then we got onto the prototyping stage, and this particular project was about prioritizing a project, so creating a project plan basically for the next stage. And we were junk modeling, so we were using cardboard and materials, and he created this model, and he sort of worked quite independently although he was still part of his group, and made this model of a risk assessment. And it was the most amazing visualization of a risk assessment I've ever seen. So it was a cardboard box with a sort of tube, I don't know what they're called, S-bend tube in it, and a hole in the top. And you could put all these risks in the top and they would go through the tube. And then there were different levers to either let them through the tube or, you know, direct them in a different way. And he used this kind of concept that he'd made to describe why he felt that actually managing risk was really important in this project. Whereas before, he'd been a little bit shut down by some of the maybe more creative people or like, let's try it, we could do this type people. And actually, he was able to use those creative techniques and that creative thinking to make his point that actually his maybe slightly more traditional view had value and was important in the process. So I think that's a really nice illustration of, in that particular situation, how those two kind of ways of working came together.
That's a lovely example, because it does flow both ways, doesn't it? You know, whether you have a more traditional or risk-averse kind of approach to life and to work versus, you know, the young free spirits or whatever that might be on the other side of things. But your opinion thing is no less valid. As you say, the skills of the facilitator and the strength of the model means that you're able to express yourself and again contribute. And this is the key thing, isn't it? It's that contribution part. So that individual didn't feel left out, unheard, they didn't have a voice, you know, if they're less confident or perhaps more introverted. How do you see design thinking principles being applied into things like company culture, for example? That's a big thing. And certainly we spoke about a lot in our podcast about the power of the culture within an organization through good times and through bad. It can often be the thing that carries a company through, carries a company through the latter. So how would you see a brilliant thing working with a business, or how could a business use design thinking when it comes to things like company culture?
Yeah. So if I just pick one part of the design thinking process, which is that kind of ideation bit. So we understand what problem, or we understand the challenge and the context. We've got a lot of knowledge about it by this point, and we're now starting to think about what's possible. In the design thinking training that I deliver, which I often deliver to councils and kind of bigger organizations, there's a part where we're just about to go into that kind of ideation bit. And you can sort of feel in the room, you know, there's usually loads of solutions. And I've usually had to stop people coming up with solutions in the previous phases. And we pause and I'll ask, when do you have ideas at work? And there's often a bit of a silence. or how do you have ideas at work? And people might say, oh, well, we did an away day last year. I'll say, okay, and any other ideas? And there'll be things like, or sometimes when I'm in a meeting, or sometimes there's 10 minutes at the end to talk about a problem that somebody's got. And very often there's no time for creative thinking allocated. There's certainly no time for creative thinking that people have blocked out in their own diaries. And then we'll have a conversation about, well, how do you have ideas? You know, you personally, what's good for you? And people will talk about, you know, in the shower or on the way to work or as I'm going to sleep, or these like little pockets of time where we're not being productive. That's where you can often find ideas. So then we'll talk about, well, how could we bring those two things together? How could we create a culture of creative thinkers who are able to tackle a range of complex problems and come up with some solutions or ideas for solutions? And then we'll start to talk about, well, actually, we used to, before the pandemic, we used to do this thing, or I once went on this team thing. And we'll start to think about, well, how could we systematize that? Which often leads into a conversation about systems thinking, about thinking through the kind of processes that happen in an organization, the values of that organization, often the sort of systemic barriers as well. So people will say, well, I'd love to go for a walk with my colleague, but actually, if I put that in my diary, it would be really frowned upon. And then that opens up that conversation about organizational culture and what sort of principles, values, ways of being, ways of working do we need to embed across our systems, processes, values, interactions, behaviors. And that's a whole other training session then, or a whole other development day. But you can see, just with that ideation task, I guess, that task to ideate, it needs to sit within the context of a culture that supports creativity or supports people being together or supports reflection. And I think there's lots of different parts of the design thinking process that need something else from the environment or from the culture. And it's important to work through with an organization what that looks and feels like, because otherwise you may do this brilliant process and you may come up with this amazing solution that's viable. You can afford it. You've got time to do it. Makes best use of your resources. But then if it's not something, if it doesn't have the fertile ground in which to grow, then it will just fail.
So I guess what I'm taking from that, Kerry, is that if you were to undergo this type of exercise or this kind of process with your teams, is to keep an open mind as well, just in terms of there's value in going through the process itself, as well as the outputs from the process at the other end. And it's almost like, as you say, those conversations to come out, to be drawn out. That's a lovely, by the way, concept where you think, where are you most creative? As you were speaking, I just thought, I'm not going to do that thing where I start going off on my own thought.
Well, tell us, where are you most creative?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It did make me think. I think it is in those, you summed it up really nicely. It's in those times of when you're not being productive. Productive in the sense you're not like, you know, billable hours or, you know, doing this.
And
we call it delivery work, and it's the green boxes in my calendar, where it's like basically my time has been spent on getting stuff done. It's hard to be creative in those spaces. Whereas when you've got a gap, you're eating your sandwich or you're going for a run and stuff like this. And it's a really interesting question to ask yourself. And then I guess one to push back over to your teams. Yeah. When are you most creative? And then the challenge then, as you say, is how do you create a environment where there are these pockets of space, these pockets of time where people can kind of, you know, move their thinking out of delivery, delivery, delivery. Yeah. I heard this phrase years ago, and it's lovely. You know, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And it's like that. If that's all that you're doing is ding, 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 then everything looks like a nail, you know? Whereas we need the chance and the space to kind of move outside. And I guess this is like getting a little bit meta here, but just by going through this process of design thinking in the context of company culture, if it's done properly, it will make people ask those questions. It will make people of themselves and of the teams that they've got, other people they work with, and the environment within which they work. There are lots of organizations I've come across or worked in where if you blocked out, you know, an hour a day of thinking time, people would go nuts over it. You know, they'd be like, what are you doing? I'm swamped. And this is, again, it opens up the systemic.
Reading time.
Yeah.
That's another one. So what? I'm supposed to have time to read. Aren't I supposed to just absorb everything by osmosis?
It's crazy because, the people that frown upon it, and this is the thing, the people who would frown upon it are probably the ones that are really strung out. They're absolutely slammed. And they're like, what? Ewan's gone off to read for an hour whilst I'm like, got these like 110 different things I've got to get done. And again, it looks at that, I guess, asking the question shines a light on these systemic challenges that might be within an organization that otherwise just aren't spoken about. And I imagine then
you mentioned your delivery time is in green boxes and it's on your calendar and everybody knows that. And so you've got a system, you've got a process that works because delivery is valued in your organization. And going through the design thinking process offers opportunities to reflect on what made that work? Why didn't that work? And often people will come up with their own, you know, we need time to be together. We need time to be creative. So it makes it visible. It makes that stuff, I don't know, that there's an expectation that you should just be it. It makes it more visible and the value of it more visible. So then you can have the conversation, well, maybe we should just try it for a week. Maybe we could prototype putting thinking time in our diary. We've learned this new word, prototyping. Maybe we could try it.
Yeah.
You know, we can evaluate it. We can test it. We can put all that rigor. It's not about not having rigor. And then we can reap the benefits as well.
100%. The thing that's really kind of shining a light on my brain is that it does, again, it gives a voice to that individual who might have said, you and what you're doing, spending an hour on reading time today. I'm slammed. I'd love to have some reading time. Then it does kind of, you know, make us question, what can we do? What can we do as a team to alleviate some of that delivery work off that individual so that they get that time? Because we all agreed it's important. It's all, you know, a whole kind of creative piece. It's a wonderful thing. I'm scribbling all this down, Kerry, though. I'm going to try and implement this in my team. But how else then? With design thinking, could you use it in contexts like structuring a growing business, I guess, in terms of people and thinking about their own kind of drive, their own kind of motivation as well?
Maybe if I tell you about a real life project that was a collaborative project. So this was more about different organizations coming together to create something new. But if you're thinking about a growing business, this is about bringing the different elements of that business together to build, create that new stage or that new phase. During the pandemic, I developed in my organisation that I work for, it was an infrastructure organisation, and we supported charities and community groups. And there was a need to deliver food to people. And there were a number of organisations, food banks, who had been doing that for years. There were a number of organisations who wanted to use their resources to move into this new area. And there wasn't any sort of infrastructure around those different organisations. Everyone was quite independent. And so what we did is we brought everybody together online, obviously, and sort of started to talk about what people need and want. And we thought it was going to be funding, and it was actually storage. So storage and redistribution were elements of this new need that weren't available. And we used the design thinking process and in the end developed something called a community warehouse, which supported over 60 food banks and food organisations. It meant that we were able to receive large donations and then divvy it up to smaller groups. It also meant that organisations could, if they had excess pasta or whatever, they could share it with other organisations. There was a central drop-off point for other resources like masks, you know, other donations of products and like healthcare products and things, so that we could distribute it quickly out to the voluntary sector. And it was that design thinking process that enabled all those different organisations with their different drivers and motivations and structures and sizes and funding to come together to create something new. So that's an example of lots of different organisations coming together to create quite a big new project. But on the other side of things, when I was starting Brilliant Thing, just, you know, upstairs in my loft, I was using a design thinking process as well. So I was thinking about, remember I talked about being an artist and doing that work in the NHS and being able to write a funding bid. And so starting from that point of view of like, what have I got? What are the resources that are available? Who do I know? What's my network like? What can I access or leverage into this? It's the start of that design thinking process where you're discovering what's available and then moving into, okay, well, what do I want my days to look like? Who are the people that I want to be working with? You know, asking those kind of questions. And eventually we've ended up with a Brilliant Thing. And I use this process quite a lot when I'm coaching clients as well. So I also do coaching for charity workers, public sector teams, purpose-led business owners. And we quite often adopt that kind of design thinking frame to structure our sessions, particularly if people are trying to create some kind of new project or service or redefine what they're offering or grow a team. So yeah, I just find it a really adaptable process in lots of different situations.
It certainly is. As I mentioned right at the front, it's a really elegant framework to help you take you through those kind of stages, I suppose. I suppose in the context of a growing business in terms of people, how involved would you get the people in the team, in that kind of team involved? Because you mentioned that kind of coaching, which I assume is kind of one-to-one on an individual level. But would you encourage those business leaders to involve their teams in those stages of the process? Because I guess just thinking about each stage, that resources section, that almost that kind of like evaluation of what you have now, that's an opportunity again for people to say, you know, I'm over here doing accounts, but I actually really love doing design work. Oh, you know, and I guess it gives a bit of that space for people to contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I really like doing kind of shortish structured processes in organizations, which you might have heard of sprints or that kind of approach where everybody's involved in a kind of shared project. And I think if you're going to take that approach, it's important to find a topic or something that impacts everyone to focus your work on, some kind of opportunity, some kind of challenge that affects many people. And then people have a stake in it. So you want to create that environment where it matters to people. People think it's important or it's potentially important with the solution that they might come up with. But you can also structure a whole organization through design thinking. So you can also think about, okay, if we're going to organize our work this month and we're going to organize our work to kind of point towards discovery, what does that mean about our team meetings? How will we be structuring our team meetings? What does that mean around how we organize our calendars? What does that mean around new work that we try and bid for? Whatever your core activities of your organization, what if for a month your kind of North Star was discovery? Or what if for a month your North Star was defining what matters? And you can make that process as long or short as you want, but the important bit is to capture the reflections along the way. It's really, if you're doing a short process and everyone's involved and you're doing maybe a week-long sprint, everyone's kind of in it and you're capturing along the way and you're understanding what's happening. Whereas if it's a longer process, you really want to be able to share that learning and keep reminding people that actually at the moment we're focusing on this. I also think it's really useful training of project managers, team leaders, line managers to understand some of these processes and principles and activities and tools as well, because there's lots of stages of project management that need ideation, for example, or need prototyping. So you don't always have to follow that kind of prescribed design thinking structure. I think once you've kind of got those tools under your belt, you've got them to pull out in those different moments.
It's a great analogy. And I think also that level of involvement as well. There's a phrase again that they're coming out today, aren't they? And there's a phrase that came across years ago, which was people support best what they help create. And it gets that buy-in almost as a side product. But if your teams are involved in that evaluation stage of the ideation stage of the solution stage, or the part of that creative process, they're all contributing towards that solution. So they're going to be more supportive of it, I guess, as an organization as a whole.
And there's a bit of learning from the voluntary charity community sector that I think is useful in other sectors, which is around this process called co-production. So co-production is about creating services with the people that are going to benefit from them. So for example, if somebody's experienced multiple disadvantage, maybe poverty, homelessness, drug or alcohol misuse, then they are the people who are going to understand what will work in a service to prevent that kind of behavior, change something. So there's a principle within co-production that the closer that you are to the challenge, the closer that you are to the solution. And I think that principle can be applied. Well, little side note, design thinking is really useful for co-production projects. If anybody's doing anything to do with co-production, have a look at design thinking, because co-production can get quite messy and can get quite, it's hard to do and it takes a long time, and design thinking can help guide it. But I think that message of if you're close to the challenge, you're also close to the solution is something that more corporate organizations might want to think about when they're, for example, implementing a new software system. If the people who are going to use that software system have not been involved in the procurement of that software system, or maybe the training and how that training's devised, then it's going to be a lot harder, cost more money, take longer to implement that new system, because you're starting from no buy-in. Whereas if you do some focused work with people using the system every day to understand what matters to them, what the challenges are, then you're much more likely to get a product at the end that you've already got that buy-in with. So I guess that's a more practical example of using this process.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast, and a big thank you to Kerry from A Brilliant Thing.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Beautiful Business podcast. Beautiful Business is a community for leaders who believe there's a better way to do business. Join us next time for more interesting discussions on how businesses can bring about change, helping communities, building a fairer society, and safeguarding the planet. You can also join in the discussion at www.beautifulbusiness.uk.